And welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight. Our first show, in fact, since the school holidays has finished and the Easter and Anzac Day long weekend. So good to have your company here again on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Jodie Hoffman with you in the chair for the next hour, and hope you can stay with us. Coming up on our program today, a little later, we're going to be talking about your rights as a consumer and talking about some scams that have been happening in Western Australia that it'd be good for you to keep an eye out for, and also some really useful advice on what to do when you're buying a car. So do stay tuned for that. Annette Bellingeri is joining us from Consumer Protection later this hour. We're also talking about the very important issue of racial discrimination, and in particular the Act, Section 18C of the Act, and government submissions to government are due by the end of today in relation to some possible changes that were brought in, that were considering being brought in. So Nikki Dwyer, one of our lawyers from the Civil and Human Rights Unit at the Aboriginal Legal Service, will be letting us know all about the Racial Discrimination Act as it was, what the proposed changes are, what those changes could mean, and also how organisations have been getting their submissions in before the 30th of April deadline to pass their comments on about that. But first, we're going to talk about copyright, and our guest today is a Torres Strait Islander and Ghanaian woman from Sydney, and welcome to the program for the very first time, Patricia Ajay, who is the Indigenous Communications Coordinator and Legal Officer at the copyright agency VizCopy. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jodie.
It's the first time we've had a chat with you, but it's a really important area of law, being copyright. And I guess at the Aboriginal Legal Service, it's not an area that we're involved in personally. We do criminal law and civil and human rights law and some advocacy and family law. But the area of copyright and looking after the rights of artists is hugely important when you look at how many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists there are in this country, isn't it?
Yeah, there are thousands of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists across the country, and many of them are based in Western Australia as well.
So let's talk a little bit about you. Tell us about yourself, Patricia, more about where you're from and how you came to be working in the area that you do.
Okay, so my mother's family comes from the Torres Straits and the Cape York region in North Queensland, but I grew up in Sydney. I studied law and arts at the University of New South Wales, and my first role as a solicitor was actually at the Arts Law Centre of Australia, based in Sydney, and now I'm working at the copyright agency VizCopy, mainly in a sort of communications engagement type role with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists across the nation.
Okay, so what does that role actually involve?
So we are what's called a copyright collecting society. So we collect and distribute copyright licensing fees to our members who are artists, writers and publishers. And my role is specifically to be a point of call for any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander members, artist members or writers who want information about copyright, about licensing, or also about our resale royalty scheme that we manage. So I spend a lot of time also travelling out to different communities. Like next week I'll be coming over to Perth to talk at the ATUA Arts Worker Conference, and then after that I'll be travelling over to Darwin, and we're visiting some Aboriginal art centres in Katherine and Beswick. So I spend a lot of time working with artists, making sure that they're aware of their rights in terms of copyright and resale royalty and licensing, and how they can, you know, if they want to, how they become a member of copyright agency VizCopy.
It's really interesting, Patricia, because I know that there are so many examples of where people have been ripped off through their arts. I know that an organisation over here, the Dumbartung Aboriginal Artists Corporation, produced a book called Hamburgers for Masterpieces, and it really highlighted a lot of the exploitation that does happen to our mob in terms of their art being used and exploited. Have you come across a lot of examples yourself?
Yeah, a lot of the examples that we do hear from our members are, you know, people copying their works, maybe from a book or from a website without their permission, and how they'd get proper remuneration for the copy of their work. Because if you are the copyright owner in your artwork, then you're entitled to enter into a license agreement or get some sort of payment for the copying of your work. So that's really what VizCopy does. It's a copyright body that licenses images to different companies, different people, third parties, and making sure that income goes back to the artist.
So if you're an artist and you're here in Western Australia or in Central Australia or over in Adelaide or whatever, and you've produced some artwork and you think, look, I want to protect this work, what's the process? Is it a complex one?
No, they can become a member of VizCopy, and VizCopy will act on their behalf if they are approached, say, by a company who wants to copy their work. And maybe put it on merchandise or on a website or a T-shirt or a calendar. Instead of that artist directly negotiating with that company, they can say, I'm a member of VizCopy, and VizCopy will negotiate on their behalf. And the process to become a VizCopy member, you can go onto our website, www.vizcopy.org.au, or you can actually give us a call. So we have a toll-free number. If you are interested in becoming a VizCopy member, which is 1-800-066-844, and you just ask for Trish, and then I can help you fill out the required forms to become a VizCopy member. But it's free membership. There's no payment to become a VizCopy member. I can talk to you more about copyright and licensing as well.
And I imagine there's some costs associated with that when it goes through to that licensing stage, but the fact that they've got that support for the free service that you guys are providing could save them thousands of dollars in the interim, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we do work with a lot of Aboriginal art centres in Western Australia, so a lot of those art centres will sign up their artists as members, and then if they're approached by a third party or a company to license their work, then they come directly to VizCopy, and then we do all the negotiations, collect the licensing money, and then we pay it out to the artists. And we do charge a 25% administration fee to cover our costs, but it's a worthwhile service, and it also makes sure that the artist is protected and that licensing fees are going back to the artist.
You've got a bit of an enviable job, because I imagine, you know, you're getting to see lots of the country but also meeting some pretty incredible people along the way.
Yeah, I get to go to amazing places, amazing communities across Australia. I've been to all the states and territories in Australia, and worked with, you know, sort of high-profile Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists, which is really great. Because VizCopy has 10,000 membership base, and 50% of those members are actually Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. So we do have an Indigenous engagement plan, and we do work quite heavily with our Indigenous members.
And how vibrant is? I mean, I know that art has always been a part of our culture anyway, but I imagine that it's thriving in the places that you're visiting.
Yeah, in some places, you'll go to the art centre and you'll see all these amazing artworks. You know, I've bought quite a few paintings from different art centres that I've visited. I've been to the Kimberley, and a few years ago I was up in the Gascoyne region. So it was great to visit those different artist communities and see the work that's actually coming out of there. But yeah, there is a very strong, keeping culture sort of mentality coming out of these artist communities. And it's also a way for artists to make money and bring that money back to their families and their communities as well.
And what feedback are you getting, Trish, when you're talking to people about the services that can be provided by the copyright agency, VizCopy, in terms of, you know, them retaining the ownership of that piece that they should have, while also protecting the integrity and making sure that its images aren't being exploited? Do you get get great feedback?
Yeah, we do get quite positive feedback from artists. A lot of people are very appreciative that these services exist, so that's really good to hear. But we're also listening to different artists. You know, if there's anything that they want us to change about our services, or they have any ideas, they can always suggest those ideas to myself.
And can you give us any examples of where people have been ripped off?
I think there are some regions, say in Central Australia, a lot of the sort of interactions that go on with the Alice Springs dealers, some of those dealers are sort of a bit questionable about how they treat the artists that they work with. We're always very supportive of artists working with art centres, because Aboriginal art centres are sort of seen as a safe place for artists to work, and their rights are recognised, and they do receive, you know, a fair income for the sale and also the copying of their work.
Okay, so that's a good tip anyway, isn't it, for people to work through art centres and maintain a bit more protection that way?
Yeah, and we also encourage artists to sort of become informed about the business that they're dealing with. If they're dealing with someone that, you know, might seem a bit, let's say, dodgy, then to really think about, you know, is this a good person to work with? Do I know my rights in relation to copyright and also resale royalty? Am I getting a fair deal? You know, if they're given something to sign, do they understand what they're signing, or do they need to get legal advice before they sign it? So all those types of tips.
Now, you're located in Sydney, so I imagine that there's a phone service available as well, and a website for people to jump onto, which we'll give out at the end of this interview. But I'm speaking with Patricia Ajay from the copyright agency VizCopy in Sydney, and you mentioned you're heading over here next week for a conference. But I did also want to talk to you about the resale royalty for visual artists, and it's currently under review.
Yes, so this is quite a new law that was introduced back in June 2010, and it's a special right for all Australian visual artists, not just Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists, but all Australian artists. And it means that when your work resells on the secondary market over $1,000, the artist will get a 5% royalty. And so far the scheme has generated about $2.5 million for Australian artists. So that equates to about 8,300 resales, and more than 60% of those royalties have been going to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists across the country. But last year in July, the scheme was actually under review, and the Office for the Arts, which is now the Ministry for the Arts, who manages the scheme, they opened up for submissions, and the Minister for the Arts, who is actually the Attorney General, George Brandis, he will be reviewing the scheme, and we're waiting to hear back from him for the report, which should come out either next month or in June.
Okay, but I'm sure that got a lot of organisations and community members talking about the importance of such a thing, hey?
Yeah, there's been quite a big artist campaign. There's still a change.org petition online which artists can sign if they're interested, and there's also a resale right blog which people can go to, resalerightnow.wordpress.com. It's got information about the resale royalty scheme and also the review.
All right. Look, Patricia, some great information you've given us on the program today, and be great to have you over in Western Australia next week, catching up with a lot of the mob over here. And the conference you're attending is what?
It is the ATUA Western Australian Aboriginal Art Workers Conference. It'll be in Fremantle, and ATUA is the umbrella peak body that services all the Western Australian Aboriginal art centres. So they're holding a conference next week, which I'll be attending and presenting at.
Good stuff. We'll try and have some good weather waiting for you.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Patricia, thanks for chatting with us, and hopefully we can have a chat a bit down the track as well, just to keep reminding people that as artists they do have rights and there is protection available to make sure that you can keep control of your own artwork.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention one last thing. VizCopy is holding the annual John Fries Award, which is a $10,000 award for emerging visual artists, and that actually closes next Monday. So if you want more information, you can go on our website or give me a call.
All right, let's give those details out, Patricia.
Great. So the VizCopy website is www.vizcopy.org.au, or we have a toll-free number, 1-800-066-844, and just ask for Trish.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time on Law Matters today. Enjoy your time in Perth next week at the conference, and we'll chat with you again in the future.
Great. Thank you so much, Judy.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Patricia Rajay is the Indigenous Communications Coordinator and Legal Officer at copyright agency VizCopy. So good information there for you for emerging artists. What a great award coming up. The 2014 John Fries Award, $10,000 award open to emerging artists in Australia and New Zealand. And if you need any information about copyright, protecting your work, give VizCopy a call, jump on the website, all their information is there. Jodie Hoffman with you on Law Matters 100.9 FM, Noongar Radio, Noongar Digital Radio. Let's have a listen to this one from Yothu Yindi. When we return, we're talking about Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act with Nikki Dwyer from the Aboriginal Legal Service. Law Matters. Jodie Hoffman with you and taking you up to the top of the clock. And this program comes to you every fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Today is Wednesday, the 30th of April 2014. And as we speak, I imagine there's a lot of people sitting in their offices with their doors closed, doing the final touches to their submissions to George Brandis about proposed changes to the Racial Discrimination Act. Now, the Racial Discrimination Act, Section 18C, covers offensive behaviour because of race, colour or national or ethnic origin. What does it all mean? What are the proposed changes? And how much time have we got to get those submissions in? Well, Nikki Dwyer is a solicitor with the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, and the submissions do close today, the 30th of April. So I imagine that the Aboriginal Legal Service is in great company with a lot of other organisations who have been having something to say about this. Nikki, how are you going?
Good, thanks, Jodie.
Tell us, let's start at the beginning. Sure. In terms of what has led to this. A while ago, it was suggested that there needed to be changes to Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act.
Yeah, that's correct, Jodie. Look, I think this was a bit of a pre-election promise where the Liberal Party agreed to repeal the sections, some of the sections, Section 18 in particular, but particularly Section 18 B, C, D and E. Now, Section 18 C is the most important. That promise is being attempted to be followed through, and as a result, we have a proposal put forward by George Brandis QC with a new Section 18 for the Racial Discrimination Act, which is the Commonwealth legislation dealing with racial discrimination. And look, it's probably important to go back even a step further, which is to just mention that Sections 18C and 18D, which I will go through the particular parts of the provisions, were originally introduced in response to recommendations from major inquiries, including the National Inquiry into Racial Violence and the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. And as we all know, these inquiries found that racial hatred and vilification can cause serious emotional and psychological harm to their targets, and they can really reinforce discrimination and exclusion of extremely vulnerable people, and that can have long-lasting and tragic effects. And so these sections were introduced into the legislation quite some time ago. And they've been working, what we think, effectively ever since to help protect more vulnerable people from this kind of public racial discrimination. So, yeah, there was a court case, a very famous one, which has been mentioned a lot in the media in September 2010, when 9 individuals commenced legal proceedings against Andrew Bolt, who's a journalist, in the federal court, and over a couple of things that Bolt had written. And Mr. Bolt was found to have breached Section 18 of the Racial Discrimination Act. And since that time, there seems to be some less favourable thoughts about the section and this resulting proposal to change it by the Liberal Party if it got into power, which it did. So as such, we now have the changes proposed in front of us, and that's what we're trying to deal with at the moment. We don't believe there's anything wrong with the sections as they currently stand, but that's what we're presented with at this point, and we are working very hard to make those submissions today, as I hope many others are as well.
So how does the legislation currently stand in we're talking about these sections 18?
Okay, so Section 18 of the Racial Discrimination Act makes acts unlawful that are reasonably likely to offend, insult, humiliate or intimidate another person on the grounds of their race. Section 18C in particular says that it's unlawful for a person to do an act otherwise than in private. So we're not talking about conduct that occurs at home in private. No government would try and legislate to control that. So it's got to be a public act that's reasonably likely in all the circumstances to offend, insult, humiliate or intimidate another person or a group of people. And that act is done because of the race, colour or national or ethnic origin of the other person or of some or all of the other people in that group. Now, there is a defence to the provision. So that is in section 18C2, which says that an act is not... apologies, this is the what the definition of an act being done in public is. So an act is not to be done in private, so it's sort of a reverse, if it causes words, sounds, images or writing to be communicated to the public or is done in a public place or is done in the sight or hearing of people who are in a public place. It's important to note at this stage that the case law has developed in a manner that has stated, in particular in the Cairns Post case in the federal court, that the words offend, insult, humiliate or intimidate are profound and serious effects, not to be linked to mere slights. And having said that, the court would of course be conscious of the need to consider the reaction from that person or group's perspective. So we're not talking about minor slights. We are talking about, you know, words that have a profound and serious effect that reach that offend, insult, humiliate or intimidate test. And it is a high burden, and it's, you know, one that there aren't many court cases in relation to this section, but, you know, that is the threshold that must be reached by the plaintiff. The defence to Section 18C is in Section 18D, which is also proposed to be repealed. And it says that Section 18C does not render unlawful anything said or done reasonably and in good faith in the performance, exhibition or distribution of an artistic work or in the course of any statement, publication, discussion or debate made or held for any genuine academic, artist or artistic or scientific purpose or any other genuine purpose in the public interest, or in making or publishing a fair and accurate report on any event or matter of public interest, or a fair comment on any event or matter of public interest if the comment is an expression of a genuine belief held by the person making the comment. So we say that the exemptions here in Section 18D demonstrate that the Act isn't an excessive restriction on free speech. As I said, Mr. Bolt did fall foul of the provisions as I've just read out, and so it's seen that this is, you know, these sections do go too far and prevent people from being able to exercise their freedom of, you know, speaking about and saying what they wish about whatever they like. So they're the sections as they currently stand. The proposal is to repeal all of them, including Section 18E, which deals with vicarious liability, and Section 18B, which talks about if an act is done for two or more reasons, and one of the reasons is racially discriminatory, then the act is taken to have a racially discriminatory nature. So that's those two sections are also proposed to be repealed. And the replacement proposed is that it's unlawful for a person to do an act otherwise than in private, so it's still got to be in public, if the act is reasonably likely to vilify another person or a group of persons or to intimidate another person or group of persons, and the act is done because of the race or colour or national or ethnic origin of the person. Furthermore, vilify is defined as meaning to incite hatred against a person or groups of persons, and intimidate is defined to mean causing fear of physical harm to a person or to the property of a person or to members of a group of persons. They've changed the test to say that the standard will be determined by the standards of an ordinary, reasonable member of the Australian community, not by the standards of any particular group, which I'll deal with in a second. And the section doesn't apply, so this is the exception, defence, to words, sounds, images or writing spoken, broadcast, published or otherwise communicated in the course of participating in the public discussion of any political, social, cultural, religious, artistic, academic or scientific matter. So it's all a bit wordy and complicated. Basically, there are a number of problems with the changes as we see them. Firstly, with respect to the legislation as it currently is, we don't see that there's a problem with it. Indeed, the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA has used that section to assist clients many times. And, you know, we really are talking about conduct and behaviour that's done in public that's well beyond any sort of exercise of free speech and is just tracks into the world of pure racial discrimination.
Give us an example.
I wouldn't want to say some of the words that would...
We can use our imagination for those bits. But give us an example of a scenario that might be presented to the Aboriginal Legal Service in terms of, you know, that person's rights to say, look, I was discriminated against based on my race because this happened.
Sure.
What sort of scenarios are there?
Sure. There's plenty I can think of. The use of social media these days has really made Section 18C an important provision. If a person, any person, goes online onto Facebook and decides that they've had enough because something's happened to them or something's happened to someone they know or because they read something, and they decide to unleash on a tirade of abuse and racial discriminatory comments, using offensive language and, you know, just being offensive and insulting and even intimidatory, maybe, you know, encouraging people to band together and do whatever it is they may want to do. You know, that's an act done in public, and that would sometimes, most of the time, be covered by Section 18C. and, you know, the examples that we see are very serious, and the use of language is so far beyond anything that hopefully anyone would think was okay. You know, we're not talking about mere slights, we're not talking about one word, we're talking about paragraphs or sentences. Yep. of serious stuff. Another example is there was a recent reports in the media of a sign going up in a pub in rural WA saying that no Indigenous person would be served in that hotel. That is a perfect example of an act being done in public that, you know, is designed to offend and insult and humiliate Aboriginal people. Indigenous was the word that she used, that was used in the sign, but you know, that's a Section 18C type issue. So
it's quite common then?
It is. It's unfortunately more common than we think.
Yep.
And, I mean, I think it's common because we get calls about it all the time. Maybe other people don't. I'm not even sure if George Brandis QC knows how common it is and the kind of language that really can be used by people.
And there'd be a lot of people who are discriminated against who perhaps wouldn't stand up and contact anyone for assistance in that as well. So it's just the cases that we're finding out about. So
absolutely.
If that's the ones we're finding out about, there's got to be a whole lot of other stuff happening as well. So it's really trivialising the seriousness and the ramifications that can come from racial discrimination, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, again, that's another thing that's underestimated is the true tragic and horrible effect this can have on people. We get calls all the time about people who've been, feel they've been racially discriminated against. And it's really defeating. It's quite scary for some people, you know, especially when it's done in public in that kind of manner. It can be have even further ranging effects. You know, it can cause discontent within communities and neighbourhoods, and it can draw attention to issues that, you know, are incorrect or wrong, and it can just cause so many, you know, problems for the victim and even the person often who's, you know, posted the material or made the public comment. You know, it's very shocking, you know, what can happen to them as well. And, you know, the most vulnerable people in society need to be protected by this legislation. And that's one of the problems with the new test. the standard of determining whether something has breached the section will be determined by and what's called an ordinary reasonable member of the Australian community and not by the standards of the particular group within the Australian community who is alleging that they've been discriminated against. And this is really worrying because it basically, you know, a person has to claim they've been discriminated against, but then it won't be really up to them or, you know, they're in their reasonable mind whether it has actually in fact discriminated against them. It will be a test of an ordinary reasonable member of the Australian community who may never, as I'm sure maybe many politicians or people have never been discriminated against in their life and would have no idea what it feels like.
Yeah.
So that's really worrying, whereas previously, you know, it was called the reasonable victim test, where the person who alleged that they'd been discriminated against, you know, whether they, the test was whether, you know, they had reasonably actually been discriminated against, but it was really from their perspective, which is seen as one of the problems with the legislation as it currently stands. But, you know, they're the people who are victim to these sorts of issues and who can suffer those psychological and mental harms as a result and who can tell deep within themselves whether they have been discriminated against and can talk to the feelings, you know, that causes and the, you know, unease, etc. So it's important that it's really from their perspective.
Well, it certainly raised a lot of discussion in the community, the communities in which we live, and also within the media. Submissions to George Brandis do close today, 30th of April. A lot of different cultural groups coming out and speaking out against the changes. It's great to see that there is so much opposition to it and that people are sort of putting their submissions into government, which will all be taken into consideration. How long does it take from a submission reaching its endpoint to a result being announced?
We'd hope only a few months. Mm-hmm. We're hoping there will be a lot of submissions put in. Certainly there's media reports of people from other communities who are unhappy with the changes, proposed changes. So we're hoping that they'll be putting in submissions as the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. They will no doubt take some time to consider depending on how many are in there. We really would hope that it won't get through the changes to the legislation. We really don't see any problems with the original legislation as it is. The new definition of intimidation and vilify are just far too narrow. The protections offered to people are going to be, you know, reduced drastically. And a lot of the stuff I was talking about before, of examples I was giving you, wouldn't be covered under the new proposed changes, and that would be an absolute tragedy for our clients and for, you know, the greater community who may be at the wrong end of this kind of conduct. So, yeah, look, we're hoping that we'll know the state of play as soon as possible, but certainly we'd encourage people who aren't happy with the changes, just as we aren't, to certainly have their voices heard.
Okay. Nikki, thanks for coming and explaining it all to us. Section 18 of the Racial Discrimination Act here on Noongar Radio. Nikki Dwyer, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jodie.
Okay. And coming up shortly, we're going to be talking about consumer rights, giving you a bit of a hand when considering what to do when you're buying a car, letting you know about some scams that are happening, all that and more with Annette Bellingeri from Consumer Protection in the Kimberley area. Here on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM, Jodie Hoffman with you on the Law Matters program. Great to have your company wherever you're listening in Western Australia. Well, we're joined on the program today by a woman we spoke with not long ago, but covering some really important issues about scams and your rights as a consumer. And it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program Annette Bellingeri. Now, Annette is the Senior Regional Officer in the Kimberley of Consumer Protection, the Department of Commerce here in WA. Annette, thanks for coming back on the program.
That's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Timely, because there's been some news up in Broome about some penalties against a used car dealer and one of its directors. What's all that about?
That's right. Well, earlier this month, a Broome used car dealer and one of its directors was ordered to pay just under $14,000 in fines and compensation and costs after they were found guilty of making false representations to two of their customers. So the business is Tomroy Proprietary Limited. They were trading as Motor House of Clementson Street in Broome. And they, in one matter, it was alleged they sold a Mazda Bravo to a couple for $10,500 on the condition that the vehicle was serviced, the wheels aligned, the battery replaced, and there was a thump sensation coming from the drivetrain. So that was supposed to be investigated and repaired. In this case, they were found guilty of making false representations about the quality of the vehicle. They were saying that the thump coming from the vehicle was normal. And despite 10 visits to the car yard by the couple, the dealer refused to acknowledge that the car had problems. So that was the first issue. The second one was in relation to a Land Rover Freelander that was sold to a lady for just under $8,000. She was given an extended warranty of $1,990, which she accepted. Motorhouse was the authorised representative of Australian Warranty Network, and they didn't submit the signed application, so the extended warranty was never validated. In that case, they were also fined for those false representations. So it's important that people know when they're buying vehicles from car dealers that the car dealers will be open and honest, and it's easy to take advantage of consumers as well. So all transactions need to be transparent, they need to be based on honesty.
Okay, so as consumers or people who are heading off to buy a car, what are some of the things that we should be mindful of during that process?
Well, there's a fair bit to think about when you're buying a car. Usually you're outlaying quite a lot of money, so you want to do your research. That's the most important thing. Decide what type of car you need. Set yourself a budget. Perhaps see a financial counsellor before you do. Go out and look for a car. Also allow for your stamp duty and transfer fees. In your budget, you have to think about the running costs, your petrol, insurance, registration, servicing, maintenance, those sorts of things. Do a bit of research about the prices of vehicles that you're looking at, and think, especially for places up here, for instance, in the Kimberley, think about the availability and costs of spare parts, particularly for imported and older cars. If you need a loan, try and have that done and sorted before you go out and look for a car, so you can get the best deal on the loan and you're not paying unnecessary interest. You can also get your loan pre-approved. That way you know exactly how much you can afford before you go out. And then there's lots to think about when you're buying the vehicle as well. What I'd suggest to people is the Consumer Protection website has some fantastic resources on buying a vehicle, including where to buy, buyer beware if you buy privately, doing a personal property security check or PPSR check, warranties, what you're entitled to take things back for, that sort of thing. So have a look at the website. There's also an Ask Us Consumer Protection Facebook page. And there's the My Daddy Car audio series as well. You can also ring us. We're happy to talk you through it.
Okay. Now, look, the example you used there was of the, earlier this month, the Broome used car dealer and one of its directors being ordered to pay over $13,000 in fines, compensation and costs after being found guilty of making false representations to two customers. So I'm presuming that those two individual customers came forward to you and provided information on where they felt they'd got the wrong end?
Well, that's right. Consumer Protection's there. If you just want to ask us a question, find out where you stand, if you're happy to go and sort something out yourself. You can also lodge a complaint with us if you're unable to resolve an issue, be it with a car deal or any other consumer protection matter, and we'll try and negotiate a settlement on your behalf. We don't act on behalf of either party, but we just look at the facts and see what might be a fair resolution. During the course of that, we might also identify some issues, and those might go forward for further investigation as they did in this case.
And look, honestly, to our community members listening, there's no harm in asking if you think you've been ripped off. It is just a phone call to get some more information. Whether you have or whether you haven't been, it just really doesn't hurt to ask, does it, Annetta?
Well, there's a lot to think about, and you're not expected to know everything about what all the laws are, what all the warranties are that apply, what you're entitled to, what you might not be entitled to. So ask the question, at least you know where you stand before you go in and negotiate for a good deal.
Annetta, just we've got a couple of minutes before we need to head off to the news, but before we do go, just wanted to touch briefly on the Tiny Tots matter.
Yes, this is Tiny Tots Images Photography. They travel around to remote towns and communities. We've seen them up here in the Kimberley, also the Pilbara, and perhaps further south. They entered into an enforceable undertaking with the ACCC. They've signed up approximately 1,400 consumers for photographic services right across Australia. Mostly it was to people in remote and rural locations with pop-up shops. Consumers were misled when they were told they had no cooling off rights when you do have 10 days cooling off, and they were also not advised how they could terminate the agreement. So in this case, Tiny Tots have agreed to write to everybody and offer the option of refunds if people haven't been provided with their goods and they're still making payments. So you've got two choices. You can either do nothing, keep making the payments and eventually get your photographs, or if you'd like to cancel, then you can definitely do that as well. There's lots of people affected in Jigalong, Meekatharra, Halls Creek, Fitzroy, Kununurra, Wiluna, Wyndham, Bidjadanga, Beagle Bay, a lot of communities affected. So if you do need some help, see a financial counsellor if you can. Take the letter to somebody in your community, whether at the office or somebody that you know and trust, and then see what you want to do.
Good, useful information for us as always on the program, Annetta. Thank you so much for joining us. How's the Kimberley going? Nice weather up there?
It's pretty steamy weather still up here, but I can't complain.
You could never complain, could you, being up there? Annetta, thank you for joining us on Law Matters, and we'll touch base with you again before too long.
Thank you very much.
That is Annetta Bellingeri, who is the Senior Regional Officer of the Kimberley Consumer Protection Department of Commerce Australia. For more information about this or anything else we were talking about in relation to consumer protection, you can call 1300 304054, 1300 304054. That wraps up Law Matters for another fortnight. Thank you from myself, Jodie Hoffman, for your company. Hope you can join me again in a fortnight's time on the Wednesday, and we're repeated Sunday nights.